पाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रा मई की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण चंद्र की जय। श्री श्री लक्ष्मी नरसिंह अनंत देव की जय। श्री शालिग्राम देव की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Hare Krishna. According to our Vaishnava calendar, today is an important day because it is, for one, the appearance day of Sri Radha Raman Dev in Vrindavan. You know the famous deity and temple of Radha Raman. So this was the day when he appeared in that form. It is also the appearance day of Srila Madhavendra Puri, the Param Guru of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is also the appearance day of Srila Srinivas Acharya, one of the trinity of great book distributors, who started the whole book distribution program almost 500 years ago. And there are some other events also. So today we will try to discuss some of these events. Because time is limited, so we'll discuss only two of the events. One is the appearance of Sri Radha Raman Dev in Vrindavan, and second, the appearance of Srila Srinivas Acharya. Discussions on Srila Madhavendra Puri will take a very long time. So we will discuss these two. So that PPT is coming just now. So since we are going to speak about Radha Raman Dev in Vrindavan, we can sing a song called Jai Radha Krishna Geeti, which glorifies the main deities of Vrindavan and also their main servants, the main acharyas who served them and who started worship of these deities in Vrindavan. How many of you have sung this before or you have heard this before? Please raise your hand. Okay. Jai Radha Madhava, Radha Madhava Radhe. Jai Radha Madhava, जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे जय देवे प्राणधन हे जय राधा मदन गोपाल राधा मदन गोपाल राधे जय राधा मदन गोपाल राधा मदन गोपाल राधे सीता नाथ प्राण धन हे जय राधा गोविंद राधा गोविंद राधे जय राधा गोविंद राधा गोविंद राधे रूप गोस्वामी प्राण धन हे जय राधा मदन मोहन राधा मदन मोहन राधे जय राधा मदन मोहन राधा मदन मोहन राधे सनातन प्राण धन हे जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधा गोपीनाथ राधे जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधा गोपीनाथ राधे मधु पंडितेर प्राण धन हे जय राधा दामोदर राधा दामोदर राधे जय राधा दामोदर राधा दामोदर राधे जीव गोस्वामी प्राण धन हे जय राधा रमण राधा रमण राधे जय राधा रमण राधा रमण राधे गोपाल भट्ट प्राण धन है, जय राधा विनोद राधा विनोद राधे, जय राधा विनोद राधा विनोद राधे, लोकनाथ प्राण धन है, जय राधा गोकुलानंद राधा गोकुलानंद राधे, जय राधा गोकुलानंद राधा गोकुलानंद राधे, विश्वनाथ प्राण धन हे, जय राधा गिरिधारे राधा गिरिधारी राधे, जय राधा गिरिधारी राधा गिरिधारी राधे, दास गोस्वामीर प्राण धन है, जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे, जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे, श्यामानंद प्राण धन हे, जय राधा बांके बिहारी राधा बांके बिहारी राधे, जय राधा बांके बिहारी राधा बांके बिहारी राधे, हरिदास प्राण धन है, जय राधा कांत राधा कांत राधे, जय राधा कांत राधा कांत राधे, वक्रेश्वर प्राण धन हे, जय गांधर्वी का गिरिधारे गांधर्वी का गिरिधारी राधे, जय गांधर्वी का गिरिधारी, गांधर्वी का गिरिधारी राधे। सरस्वती प्राण धन है, जय राधा कृष्ण चंद्र, राधा कृष्ण चंद्र राधे। जय राधा कृष्ण चंद्र, राधा कृष्ण चंद्र राधे। ओम ज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणे प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So this beautiful song, apparently composed during Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, or maybe a little after his departure, because it contains his name also, Saraswati Pranadhanahe. The deities in his temple were called Gandharvika Giridhari. Gandharvika is the name of Srimati Radharani. This song also contains the names of many other prominent deities of Vrindavan and the main acharyas who were worshipping them, serving them, and in some cases those who were responsible for even establishing their temples. So we heard their names of the deities and the acharyas. So Vrindavan is a wonderful place with such a nice, rich devotional history. And when we visit the temples and we learn about the pastimes, it is very, very nourishing for our Krishna consciousness. And to know about our acharyas and the deities that they worshipped and the temples that they established is very important for us. As followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we need to know the heritage that we have inherited. Vrindavan, the mood of Vrindavan, the pastimes of Vrindavan, the deities and temples of Vrindavan, and the main followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As I mentioned before singing the song, today happens to be the appearance day of Sri Radha Raman Dev. Radha Raman is one of the more famous and popular deities in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada one time commented that the standard of worship in Radharaman temple is among the best in Vrindavan at that time, in the 1970s, he said that. It's a very beautiful deity, and what is noteworthy about it initially is that the deity is very small, not just about this big, but it is very intricately formed. The features of the deity are very fine, and even the teeth, etc., of the deity can be seen. And what is even more wonderful is that this deity was never carved by anybody. It was a self-manifest deity, a deity that appeared from a Shaligram Shila. We have so many Shaligram Shilas on the altar here. We can see they all have different names and different symptoms or different imprints by which we can recognize one type of Shaligram Shila from another. These Shaligram Shilas are available only in one place originally, that is the Gandaki River in Nepal. And the great devotee and acharya who was responsible for Radha Ramana Dev to manifest in Vrindavan was Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he went to reside in Puri. But very shortly thereafter, he decided to go on a pilgrimage to many holy places in South India and to some degree in Western India. So as he moved further and further south, he came to the very famous Sri Rangam temple, where the deity of Lord Ranganath resides in great splendor and majesty. Very, very large deity. When Mahaprabhu entered Sri Rangam and the precincts of the temple, then hundreds of brahmanas were chanting Vedic mantras. Thousands of pilgrims were there to have darshan of Lord Ranganath. And Mahaprabhu was so overwhelmed by seeing the beautiful form of Lord Ranganath that he began to sing and dance in great ecstasy. And so profound was the influence of his singing and dancing and his very appearance upon the minds of the priests, the brahmanas, as well as the general population who had come to take darshan of Lord Ranganath, that they began to marvel and glorify Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they said, this must be some demigod, some very extraordinary person who can exhibit symptoms of this sort. At that place, there was one devoted Sri Vaishnava Brahman whose name was Sri Venkata Bhatta. Now, he was also profoundly influenced by darshan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he invited him home. And Mahaprabhu happily accepted, recognizing Venkata Bhatta to be a very pure-hearted Vaishnava. And Mahaprabhu actually was there for the entire Chaturmasya period, 4 months. And traditionally, sannyasis who travel everywhere, they do not travel in the Chaturmasya period. They remain at one place. Although Prabhupada did not follow that as such, that was in the traditional times, in the old days, that was followed. In some other mathas, Vaishnavas as well as non-Vaishnavas, the sannyasis, many of them still follow this practice. And they go to one place, one holy place, or one matha, one temple, and live there for the entire Chaturmasya period. But Srila Prabhupada was emphasizing preaching so much that he didn't emphasize this idea of sannyasi staying at one place for 4 months. He said, travel everywhere, preach, go everywhere and preach Krishna consciousness. Anyway, so Mahaprabhu was there, and the whole family of Venkata Bhatta, his wife, his child, also his brother Tirumalla Bhatta, and Prabodhananda Saraswati, both who were great elevated Vaishnavas, became very attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Venkata Bhatta had a small son at that time. He was only a child. And his name was Gopal. And Gopal also became very attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and would serve him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also very fond of this little boy and very often would give him remnants of his own prasadam. Sometimes he would make him sit on next to him or on his lap. And in this way, Gopal got the opportunity to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu, in fact, was preparing him for his future role as a great acharya. Later on, he would come to be known as Gopal Bhatta Goswami. As Gopal continued to serve, his attachment to Mahaprabhu grew continuously, as did that of the other family members. After Chaturmasya, when the time came for Mahaprabhu to proceed ahead from Srirangam, little Gopal began to bitterly weep because he could not bear separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The other members of the family were also dreading the time when the Chaturmasya would end, because that would mean the departure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from their midst. And that was something that they found very, very terrible. So when Gopal was bitterly weeping, Mahaprabhu, in order to console him, decided to stay on there for a few days more. And then he told Gopal, he gave him an instruction that he should serve his parents till they lived. And after they departed from this world, then he should come and stay in Vrindavan. So this was the instruction he gave him even at that young age. And Mahaprabhu moved on. Actually, it is said by some people that Mahaprabhu also initiated Gopala at that time, in that early age. And Mahaprabhu went away to other places and then eventually he traveled and returned to Puri. And sometime after that, some years later, then Mahaprabhu eventually went to Vrindavan. But because Venkata Bhatta and his wife were alive, so Gopal was following the instructions of Mahaprabhu and faithfully serving his parents, who were also great Vaishnavas. And at the same time, he began to get nice instruction in the usual subjects that Brahmana children would get instructed in, about Sanskrit, grammar, and so on and so forth. He started learning Vedanta after some time. And then later he was instructed in the Bhakti Shastras by his celebrated uncle, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, who was also sannyasi in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line. And when the time came and for Venkata Bhatta and his wife to depart from this world, they went back to the spiritual world. And Gopal was now ready to go to Vrindavan. Several years had elapsed since Mahaprabhu's visit. When Mahaprabhu came there, this was in 1511. So Mahaprabhu must have been about 25 years old roughly at that time, because he was born in 1486. And when Gopal Bhatta's parents departed from this world, Gopal Bhatta was a little under 30 years of age. So he waited for a good number of years. And then he departed and reached Vrindavan when he was about 30 years of age. Meanwhile, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already informed Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami that Gopal would be joining. And they were also expectantly waiting for Gopal Bhatta to arrive. And when he did, Gopal Bhatta was very warmly welcomed by Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis and the other Vaishnavas who were present there in Vrindavan at that time. It was a very close-knit family of exalted Vaishnavas living in Vrindavan in those days. It was not like today when there were hundreds of mutts and temples and thousands of people living there. And now the place has become very commercial. There are huge buildings and cars and roads and so on. But in those days, Vrindavan was just like a forest. There was hardly anything there. Actually, it was only after the six Goswamis went there that the temples started manifesting one after the other. And those temples we saw mentioned in the song that we sung at the beginning of this talk. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami joined Rupan Sanatan Goswamis. He lived with them and just like them. At that time, they did not even have some bhajan kutirs in which to stay. And they were wandering every night and going living under different trees. And they would sometimes meet together, have Krishna Katha together, then go to another place. And they were living very frugally, very, very austere lives. They would eat food by begging. And the process of begging in Vrindavan was called Madhukari. Like a bee goes from one flower to another flower and takes a little bit from one flower, a little bit from another, and another, and another. In the same way, one who does bhiksha by Madhukari goes to one home of a Brajabasi, takes a little something, he goes to another home, takes another little something, say one roti from one place, a little sabji from another place, and like this, so that no particular house is troubled by having to give too much to one person. Because after all, there were many sadhus who would come like this. So they would live like that, but they would not even eat that much. They would hardly eat anything. They would hardly sleep anything. So anyway, then Mahaprabhu departed from this world. And all the Goswamis were feeling great separation. Now, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was very scholarly. And he used to write books. He wrote a commentary on the Krishna Karnamrita of Bilva Mangal Thakur. He also wrote the Sat Kriya Sar Deepika, which contains descriptions of how the different sanskars and so on have to be performed. He also wrote a condensed version of a Vaishnava Smriti, a directory of Vaishnava activities and lifestyle and etiquette. And later on, this was expanded and it became known as the Hari Bhakti Vilas, compiled by Srila Sanatan Goswami. So he was a great scholar, and because in the Sri Sampradaya there is a lot of emphasis on deity worship and procedures and mantras and so on, Gopal Bhatta had been well trained in all of that, and therefore he made a manual explaining all these things. In the meanwhile, with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance from this world, Gopal Bhatta was feeling great separation. And one time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream and told him, go to Nepal and then you come back and you will be able to serve me even better. So then, obediently, Gopal Bhatta Goswami left Vrindavan to go to Nepal. He visited the various holy places in Nepal, and particularly he went to the holy Gandaki River where the Shaligram Shilas are found. He was taking bath in the river, and then he placed his kamandalu, his jar, into the water, into the river to take some water. And some of these shilas, these stones, these sacred stones, they came into the pot. Then he emptied the pot. Then he again wanted to fill the pot with water. But somehow again some more shilas came in there. He emptied it and he tried to fill it again for a third time. And this time, again he found the shilas there, and he realized that this was the Lord's arrangement. That this is what Mahaprabhu wanted. That Mahaprabhu would have wanted him to serve these Shaligram shilas. So thinking this as the arrangement of the Lord, he gathered these Shaligram shilas with great devotion and brought them back to Vrindavan. There were 12 of these shilas. And back in Vrindavan, Gopal Bhatta Goswami worshipped them with great devotion and care. Now, one time it so happened that a very rich merchant came to Vrindavan, and he had heard of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He was very influenced by him. So he came to Gopal Bhatt Goswami and offered him many, many nice sets of deity's clothes and deity's ornaments. Something for a small deity. And Gopal Bhatt said, you know, I don't have deities like this. I only have Shaligram Shilas. And these outfits, these clothes, they cannot be used on Shaligram Shilas, which are round stones like this. But the merchant said, no, 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 I want you to keep them and use them in the Lord's service. And he went away. Then Gopal Bhatt Goswami was thinking, after the departure of the merchant, well, he has given me all these different clothes for the deities and the ornaments and so on. Now, what do I do? A little while elapsed and Narasimha Chaturdashi arrived. Yesterday was Narasimha Chaturdashi. What happened on Narasimha Chaturdashi, on that tithi? The Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, manifested in a most extraordinary way from within a pillar. He cracked open the pillar and emerged from there to protect Prahlad and to destroy Hiranyakashipu, which he eventually did. So then on Narasimha Chaturdashi day, Gopal Bhatt Goswami was thinking, looking at the Shaligram and also looking at the clothes and the ornaments that the rich man had brought, which were on the side. He said, oh Lord, you manifested one time from within a pillar. So it is possible that you may also manifest from a stone. Even though it is a Shaligram, it is not an ordinary stone, not an ordinary pillar. It's a Shaligram Shila. You are non-different from the Shila. If you could manifest from a pillar, you could also manifest from a Shaligram Shila. So he was thinking and wishing and hoping like this. And then he performed his worship. He went back to his place of residence. Went next morning for an early bath in the Yamuna and then came to begin his service to the Shaligram Shilas. And to his utter amazement, he found that there were only 11 Shaligram Shilas instead of 12. And instead of the 12th Shaligram Shila, now was a most beautiful deity of Krishna. Very small, not very big. How many of you have seen this deity in Vrindavan? Yes. So the deity is very small. So the deity, as Gopal Bhatt Goswami understood after analyzing the situation, had emerged from that Shaligram Shila. Actually, till today, it is said, I haven't seen it personally because they don't allow you to go and see the deity so closely from the back. At the most, the pujaris will allow you to go and see from the platform in the front. But the pujaris say that at the rear part of this deity, there is still a part where you can see a portion of the Shaligram. And it is visible that the deity actually emerged from that Shaligram Shila. So the Shaligram Shila apparently must have burst open or opened up, and then the Lord appeared as the deity from there. So the Shaligram Shila is non-different from Krishna. And the deity of Radha Raman that appeared is also non-different from Krishna. But when there is a deity of Krishna that is a look-alike of Krishna, that resembles Krishna's form, then you can worship to your heart's content with all sorts of nice clothes and ornaments. You can decorate the deities very nicely. You can also do it with Shaligram Shila, as we see here. The Shaligram Shilas on the altar also have been very nicely decorated. But still, you can't put so many clothes and ornaments on the deities. But when you have a look-alike of Krishna, identical to Krishna, of course, then it is more joyful to worship the deity. So, anyway, Gopal Bhatt was astonished. And word spread very rapidly in Vrindavan. And news came to the ears of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and the other Goswamis living there. They all rushed. This was a great event that had happened. And they all rushed to see this miraculous event that had occurred. They saw, they had darshan of Radha Raman. They were struck with wonder. They offered their obeisances and they all had tears of ecstasy flowing down from their eyes by looking at this extraordinarily beautiful form of Krishna. Rupa Goswami named this deity as Radha Ramana Dev. Interestingly, there was no deity of Radha Rani there. Radha Raman means one who gives pleasure to Radha Rani or one who enjoys pastimes with Srimati Radha Rani. So this is the name of Krishna, Radha Raman. So Radha Rani today is present in the form of her seat. There is Radha Raman, that is Krishna, and there is an empty seat. And on the empty seat representing Srimati Radharani is a crown. That crown is there and that is what represents Radharani. So otherwise it is Radha Raman. Now Radha Raman deity being very small, he remained in Vrindavan. As you know, there were many deities, most of the deities that we found mentioned in the song that we sung at the beginning of the talk were self-manifest deities, or they were deities that were carved through by Vajranab, the great grandson of Krishna. Vajranab's father was Aniruddha, Aniruddha's father Pradyumna, Pradyumna's father Krishna. So these deities were rather large in size. There were only two deities which were very small compared to the other deities. One was Radha Raman and the other was Vrinda Devi's deity. Now, when there were frequent rumors of attacks by the Turkish soldiers, by the Mughal soldiers, the Muslim invaders over many, many years, sometimes the pujaris would hide them in different places, in one house, sometimes in another house, sometimes in the forest. And gradually, because this was causing a lot of stress and anxiety to the devotees in Vrindavan, especially the devotees who were worshipping the deities, because they were responsible for the deities. And if they were not able to protect the deities from being harmed by these marauding invaders, then it would have been a great offense. So eventually, over a period of time, one by one, all these deities were moved out of Vrindavan to other places. Haridev from Govardhan, for example, went to a place near Kanpur. And otherwise, most of the deities of Vrindavan went to either Jaipur or to places near Jaipur. And the original deities are still there. What we have in Vrindavan are what are known as the Pratibhu Murtis, replicas of the original deities of Vrindavan. But Vrinda Devi and Radha Raman Dev, these two original deities remained in Vrindavan. They were not transferred out. Because of their small size, it was easier to hide them. For the big deities, it was harder. And remember, they were all stone deities. So quite heavy to lift and move around at short notice. So Radha Raman remained in Vrindavan and Gopal Bhatt Goswami eventually constructed a nice temple. Initially the worship was very simple. He established the process of worship and he set down such nice procedures that even today, as I mentioned at the beginning of the class, Srila Prabhupada said that Radha Raman temple has one of the highest standards of deity worship in Vrindavan. Now, there were some deities of Krishna that were existing in Vrindavan before Radha Raman. Specifically, there was Madan Mohan, who was being worshipped by, anyone remembers? Sanatan Goswami. Madan Mohan was earlier known as Madan Gopal, and he was being worshipped by Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya found him. He was found at Advaita Vat. He was earlier being worship. Then later, Advaita Acharya gave it to a Brahmin of Mathura called Chaube, who was worshipping that. And eventually, when he came to Sanatan Goswami, he was renamed as Madan Mohan. So there was Madan Mohan, then there was Radha Govinda Dev being worshipped by Rupa Goswami. And there was also Radha Gopinath being worshipped by Madhu Pandit Goswami. Now, these three deities resemble Krishna, but in different aspects. The deity of Madan Mohan, it is said by the Brajabasis and expert Vaishnavas, the deity of Madan Mohan resembles Krishna perfectly from the waist downwards. That means the legs and the lotus feet. The deity of Govinda, Govinda Dev, represents Krishna or resembles Krishna identically in the torso, that is from the waist to the shoulders. That means the hand and the torso. That looks exactly like Krishna. And the third deity of Gopinath resembled, the face of the deity resembled the face of Krishna exactly. So therefore, it became the practice that devotees who came to Vrindavan for darshan would try to take darshan of all these three deities definitely. Because then you would have taken darshan of the perfect form of Krishna. Although, of course, every deity is, all of those three deities were perfect, perfectly identical with Krishna. But in appearance, in terms of perfect resemblance to the actual appearance of Krishna, this was how the Vaishnavas described it. So they would see all the three deities in the same day. Now, the exceptional thing about Radha Ramanadev was that this deity resembled Madan Mohan from the waist downwards. He resembled Govinda Dev for the hands and the torso, the chest and the navel. And he resembled Gopinath when it came to the face of the deity. In other words, Radha Ramanadev was the most exact resemblance to the form, original form of Krishna compared to any of the deities in Vrindavan. This is how it is explained. So therefore, Radharaman deity is very, very special. And as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sevayats now continue their worship in a grand fashion. The Snan Yatra there is especially very famous. They have a grand abhishek of Radha Ramanadev with sprinklers and everything like that. And then there are fans because they have it in the peak of summer. And then afterwards the pujaris, after the abhishek of the deity is over, the pujaris turn the sprinklers onto the crowds. They are there in large numbers. And there are heavy fans blowing. So then the water that is coming out of the sprinklers gets sprinkled all over the audience. So everyone has a wonderful time, a wonderful festival that happens there at the Snan Yatra. One time Gopal Bhatta Goswami had gone to Haridwar, and on the way back he met one Brahmana. The Brahmana worshipped him, he invited him to his home, served Gopal Bhatta Goswami nicely, and Gopal Bhatta could understand that this Brahmana was somewhat sorrowful. So he asked him, what happened? He said, I want a son. I don't have a son. That is why I am unhappy. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami blessed him. All right, you will have a son. When he received that blessing, the Brahmana was so joyful. He said, I will give my firstborn son to you. Those were the days. These things happened. The blessings also worked, and the people kept their promise also. They made such promises in the first place, and then they kept their promises. So then Gopal Bhatta Goswami went back to Vrindavan. 10, 11, 12 years passed. And one day when Gopal Bhatta Goswami was coming back from the Yamuna, he met one little boy who was waiting for him. And the boy immediately offered obeisances to the feet of Gopal Bhatta. And Gopal Bhatta could not recognize him. He said, "Who are you?" He said, "My name is Gopinath. And you had visited my father's house and blessed my father that he would have a son and that he would give that son to you for seva near Haridwar. And I am that son." So Gopal Bhatta then remembered his visit to that Brahmana's house. And he said, "Oh yes, very good, come, come." So Gopal Bhatta took him under his shelter and he trained him nicely in everything that a servant of Krishna should know. How to worship the deity, what was the proper etiquette, also in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And he continued there as a brahmachari. He never married Gopinath. But then later, his younger brother, whose name was Damodar, came. Damodar came along and he later took initiation from his own older brother, Gopinath. Now, Damodar was a householder. Gopinath was a brahmachari. So Damodar had three sons. And it is from these sons that then the entire Sevait family of Radha Raman Dev, the whole dynasty, the genealogy emerges. So then they had children and now it's a very complex system of division of sevas. It's very hard to understand. Certain branches of the family, they have their turns for a certain number of days. Then within that family, the sub-families will have their turn. Then the sub-sub-families will have their turn. And everyone will get time to do a particular seva at that time. So anyway, this system was established from Gopal Bhatta Goswami to Gopinath to Damodar. Damodar was a grihastha. Then the grihastha parampara there started. And till today, their descendants are worshipping Radha Ramanadev. One of the very famous temples there. So today is the appearance day of Radha Ramanadev. Remember, it is the day after Narsimha Chaturdashi. So very easy to remember. And remember that it was Narsimha Chaturdashi that reminded Gopal Bhatta Goswami that the Lord had broken through, emerged from a stone pillar. So why could he not emerge from the Shaligram Shila? Gopal Bhatta Goswami initiated another great Vaishnava whose name was Srinivas Acharya. Now, you all may have heard the name Srinivas Acharya. He is also one of the great Acharyas in our line. And the three great devotees formed a team. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu. These three. Now, they all had different Diksha Gurus. But they were sent for instruction and training to Jiva Goswami by their respective Diksha Gurus. And Jiva Goswami trained them exceptionally well. And then of course, he gave the title of Thakur to Narottam. So he became Narottam Das Thakur. And he gave the name Shyamananda, whose earlier name was Dukhi Krishna Das. And then Gopal Bhatta Goswami, out of recognition for the transcendental qualities of Srinivas and his scholarship, he gave him the title Acharya. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami initiated Srinivas and then gave him titles Acharya, so he became Srinivas Acharya. Now, coincidentally, today is also the appearance day of Srinivas Acharya. So we can have some brief discussion about the glories of Srinivas Acharya also. Srinivas Acharya was born again on the same day. This is the Purnima of the month of Vaishak. Chaturdashi, the 14th day, is when Narsingadev appeared. And the next day, the Purnima of Vaishak. And he was born in a place called Chakhandi, which is in the Nadia district, in which district Mayapur also exists. His father's name was Gangadhar Bhattacharya. He was a great devotee and follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Especially when Mahaprabhu was in Navadvip performing his Grihastha Leela as a great devotee, Gangadhar Bhattacharya was very close and very devoted to him. However, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, then Gangadhar Bhattacharya became heartbroken. And he went around like a madman in grief, saying, Ha Chaitanya, Ha Chaitanya. Saying, oh Chaitanya, where are you? And because he was exhibiting such symptoms of attachment to and separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees and the Vaishnavas in the village, they nicknamed him as Chaitanya Das. And that name stuck on. His wife's name was Lakshmi Priya. Chaitanya Das continued to serve the Supreme Lord. Then one day, he had some very deep inspiration that he wanted to have a son. So he spoke to his wife. His wife said, let us go to Jagannath Puri and take the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So happily, Gangadhar Bhattacharya agreed and they all went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and had his audience, his darshan. As soon as they reached and saw Mahaprabhu, even before they could open their mouth and speak anything, Mahaprabhu is of course the super soul in everybody's heart. He is none other than Lord Krishna. He could understand the desires and the thoughts of Gangadhar Bhattacharya and his wife, of Chaitanya Das. He said, all your desires will be fulfilled. Now there were many other devotees present at that time. And they were wondering, what desires is Mahaprabhu referring to? What desires did this Chaitanya Das come with to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant was called Govinda. So they called Govinda aside and said, Govinda, you please go and find out for us. What are these desires that Chaitanya Das had, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said they will be fulfilled? So Govinda came forward. But before Govinda could open his mouth and say anything, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in a very resonant voice, he said, Chaitanya Das came to me with the desire to have a son who will be a great devotee. I blessed him that he will have a son. His name shall be Srinivas, and he will be the personification of my love. In fact, this boy will be so exceptional that whoever he meets, he will instill into those people enthusiasm for the devotional service of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. I have written many books through Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami and others. But through Srinivas Acharya, I will distribute those books everywhere. So the origin of book distribution rests with this prophecy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about Srinivas Acharya. So Mahaprabhu blessed him and glorified him in many ways, and all the devotees were struck with wonder. And soon enough a child was born to Chaitanya Das and Lakshmi Priya. He was a son. He exhibited all sorts of extraordinary qualities right from birth. He went through the motions of the usual education. And naturally, he was very brilliant at everything he did. And as he grew up, he also became very attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And father and son would sometimes go into ecstatic trance and they would cry copious tears of separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this was one of the combinations of father and son that we wish to see in this world. Both father and son used to be completely absorbed in transcendental ecstasy. It so happened that Chaitanya Das left this world early enough when Srinivas Acharya was still young. So then Srinivas went with his mother to her father's home, which was in a place called Jajpur. And he lived there for some time. And he, of course, met many Vaishnavas there. He was very fortunate to get the blessings of so many great devotees. So when He was in Jajipur. He also heard that Narahari Sarkar was in a place called Sri Khanda, which wasn't so far from there. So he went to have darshan of Narahari Sarkar. Narahari Sarkar told him that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is about to depart from this world. He is about to conclude his manifest Leela. So if you wish, you can go to meet him before he leaves this world. So in great anxiety, Srinivas rushed back to Jajigram to tell his mother and to take her permission to go to Jagannath Puri. And then he accompanied a group of devotees that went to Puri. On the way, however, they got news that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had departed and gone back to the spiritual world. Now, poor Srinivas had started out from Jajipur with so much expectation and hope, and now these hopes were dashed to the ground because Mahaprabhu had departed. So he was heartbroken, so much so that he wanted to give up his life. But that night, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream and told him, "Don't do that. You go ahead to Puri, Jagannath Puri. That is my desire." So then Srinivas accepted that. He went ahead to Jagannath Puri. There he had darshan of not only Lord Jagannath, but also many great devotees and acharyas. He was there for some time. And after he had darshan at Jagannath Puri, then he was on the way back. He was thinking, Gadadhar Pandit, he met him there and got good instructions from Gadadhar Pandit. After spending some time in Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit advised him to go to Gowda. Gowda means Bengal, where there were many, many devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went, and he was eager to get the association of many of the exalted associates of Mahaprabhu, like Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, etc. But as his luck would have it, by the time he reached there, both Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu had departed from this world. So just see his luck. Second time that something like this happened. And again he was in great grief, and he thought, "What is the point of my living? So I want to give up my life." So when he was thinking like that, that night in the dream, Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu came to him in the dream, and they forbade him from giving up his life. So he began to associate with the other devotees, including the consort of Nityananda Prabhu, who was Mother Janava. And after being there in Bengal for some time, he was instructed by the Gaudiya devotees to go to Vrindavan. And he left for Vrindavan, hoping to get the association of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, etc. And as you know, in those days, there were no cars and aeroplanes. You had to walk. So he walked and walked from Bengal to reach to Vrindavan. And when he reached Vrindavan, what did he hear? He heard that Rupa Goswami had departed for the spiritual world. Sanatan Goswami had departed for the spiritual world. Vakreshwar Pandit had departed for the spiritual world. Raghunath Bhatta had also departed for the spiritual world. But there was Raghunath Das Goswami, there was Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and there was Jiva Goswami. They were still there. So they took him in their shelter, and they pacified him, although he was feeling extremely distraught with grief that he had not been able to see Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. But nevertheless, he had the association of these other exalted souls. So he blessed them heartily. Or they blessed him, I beg your pardon, heartily. And he stayed on and lived with them. And later on, Gopal Bhatta Goswami initiated him. And after that, he sent him to under the tutelage of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami trained Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Prabhu, and Srinivas Acharya very nicely in all the Gaudiya texts that had been composed by the Acharyas till now. So many books had been written by the Goswamis till now. Rupa Goswami had written, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatta had written, Jiva Goswami had written many books. Even Raghunath Das Goswami had written. So then Jiva called the three of them and said, now you take all these manuscripts and go to Bengal and preach the messages of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as indicated in the teachings of Rupa, Sanatan and everybody else. In those days there were no printing presses, so the books had to be handwritten on palm leaves, and every time you wanted to have a duplicate you'd have to copy it. Some other people who were expert in calligraphy, they would copy verse for verse, line by line, every book. So they had these manuscripts and they loaded it on to a bullock cart and then they set out for Bengal. It was a long, arduous journey. And then eventually in Bengal, they reached a kingdom called Vanavishnupur, which had a Hindu king. So Srinivas Acharya, Narottam and Shamananda became a little relaxed. They were thinking that at least now there are no Muslim kings who may invade us or who may destroy these books. So they let down their guard a little bit. They were a little relaxed. Now it so happened that the king of this area, his name was Birhambir. He was a Vaishnava of sorts, but he was also the king of the dacoits of that region. So his astrologer told him that now somebody has come into your kingdom on a bullock cart carrying an extraordinarily valuable treasure. Now this astrologer was not good enough to indicate what kind of treasure. So Birhambir understood that to mean material treasure like gold and diamonds and jewels and so on. However, he was thinking, how should I get it? So he told his people, go there and take away this priceless treasure from these people who are in the ox cart. But mind you, don't kill them. Because he was a sort of a Vaishnava. But don't kill them. So then when they were very tired because they had walked such a long distance, so the three great Vaishnavas from Vrindavan, they went to sleep near the ox cart. And then these representatives of King Birhambir came and they quietly stole away whatever was in the ox cart and they took it back. Birhambir was eagerly looking forward to this priceless treasure house. And he thought when he opened the package, he would find diamonds and gold. But when he opened, he found just some books. So he was taken aback and disappointed. And he said, okay, well, let it be here now. Don't talk to anyone about this. So meanwhile, the three great Vaishnavas woke up in the morning. And they were extremely horrified to see that such a great theft had happened. They were so grief-stricken that they were wailing in grief, what shall we do now? We have come so far and the very purpose for which we have come cannot be fulfilled because these books have been stolen. The most precious treasure of the works of the six Goswamis, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have gone, disappeared. So somehow the other villagers who were nearby came around and saw their grief-stricken condition and they felt sorry for them. And somehow by word of mouth, the news reached the ears of King Birhambir and he felt very bad. So he was thinking what to do. And meanwhile, Srinivas Acharya also understood that this must have happened. This king must have stolen. So he was the leader of the three. So he told Narottam Das, you go to Bengal, go to Kheturi Gram. He told Shamananda, you go to Orissa and you preach over there. And Shamananda Srinivas Acharya decided to remain in that place itself to find out where those books had gone, those manuscripts. So then he somehow a well-wisher who was a follower, who became a follower of Srinivas Acharya, introduced Srinivas Acharya to King Birhambir as a great Vaishnava who was a great exponent of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So seeing this as an opportunity to influence the king so that he would return the manuscripts to him, he began to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam at the king's request. Every day he would give many hours of lectures on the Srimad Bhagavatam, detailing the whole philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. King Birhambir was so influenced by him that not only he, but many of his followers all became genuine Vaishnavas. They became followers and disciples of Srinivas Acharya. When Srinivas Acharya, by the way, one time mentioned that, you know, they had come but they lost these manuscripts, then King Birhambir became very ashamed and he confessed that this is what had happened, and now he was too embarrassed to come and admit the fact, but now that he had raised the topic, he confessed. So with a great relief, sigh of relief, Srinivas Acharya received those manuscripts back. So anyway, Srinivas Acharya continued to preach in the whole Bengal region. He was very powerful. He went to Kheturi where Narottam Das Thakur had 6 sets of deities installed. There was grand festivities that went on there. Srinivas Acharya eventually married twice, and both times under instruction. The first time that he married, that was because Advaita Acharya appeared to him in a dream and told him to do so. Narahari Sarkar also personally told him to marry, and his own mother had also instructed him to marry. So even though he was in such an exalted state of consciousness, such an elevated Vaishnava, but out of respect for Advaita Acharya and the other authorities, he married. And some time later, some years later, he got a second instruction in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream and told him to marry another time. So he married another fortunate soul, then the second time, and he continued on with his Krishna consciousness. One of his disciples, who was very qualified, was called Ramachandra. And because he was very qualified, so Srinivas gave him the title of Kaviraj. He became known as Ramachandra Kaviraj. Now what happened is that Srinivas Acharya's disciple was Ramachandra Kaviraj. But Ramachandra Kaviraj became very close friends with Narottam Das, who was a friend of Srinivas Acharya. So this was a kind of a very strange relationship. And Narottam Das and Ramachandra Kaviraj became so close that even when Narottam Das composed his song, what did he sing? Ramachandra Sangamage Narottam Das. Although Narottam and Srinivas were friends, and Ramachandra Kaviraj was the disciple of Srinivas Acharya, but they became close friends. Anyway, Srinivas Acharya had many, many qualified disciples, and he preached Krishna consciousness far and wide. So the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was expanded very significantly by this next generation of these 3 exalted souls, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Pandit, and Srinivas Acharya. Srila Srinivas Acharya Avirbhav Divas Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Raman Avirbhav Divas Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Hare Krishna. So it is almost 8:30, so we are just in time. Thank you very much. Okay, one question. Yes. The mic is coming to you.
Maharaj, you spoke about this Gopal Bhatt Goswami writing a few scriptures, one of that being Hari Bhakta Vilas, but in which he has laid a lot of emphasis on Vaidiha Bhakti, having the background of Sri Vaishnavism. But essentially, the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is all about Raganuga Bhakti. So how do we strike a compromise and the balance between these two? And would it not be taken in a different context for those who are actually trying to understand the Gaudiya philosophy? That's the first question. The second question will come later.
Actually, there is no compromise. Because the Gaudiya teaching is meant for Raganuga Bhakti eventually. However, it is not that Raganuga Bhakti can be followed by just anyone and everyone without any qualification. Raganuga Bhakti means that bhakti which is rendered following in the footsteps of an eternal associate of Krishna in Vrindavan. Anuga, to become a follower of the Ragatmika Bhaktas, that means eternal associates of Krishna. So that is Raganuga Bhakti. It is bhakti that is done spontaneously, due to spontaneous attraction to Krishna. Now, even in the Raga Marga, there is worship of the deity of Radha and Krishna. However, on that platform, there are not many rules and regulations to be followed because it is done out of spontaneous love on that platform. Therefore, it was not that there was some fixed discipline and timings, etc., when the six Goswamis worshipped their deities. When Madan Mohan was with Sanatan Goswami, he would carry him in a pouch, cloth pouch around his neck. And at night he would place him on a branch of a tree and sleep under that tree. And he would feed him whatever that he managed to obtain by bhiksha from everywhere. So certainly a far cry from the standards that we would expect deities to have. However, in order that deity worship be accessible to those people who are not so qualified to worship the deities in Raga Marga, certain rules and regulations have been given. Now, what we follow in the Gaudiya Vaishnavism is not Vidhi Marga. We follow Vaidhi Bhakti as a precursor to Raganuga Bhakti. There are two paths. One is the path of Vidhi. It's called Vidhi Marga, where you cultivate devotional service to Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. You worship Lakshmi Narayan. And there are strict rules and regulations for such worship and for such practice of spiritual or devotional service. And one eventually, after attaining perfection, goes to Vaikuntha Loka. The other Marga is called the Rag Marga, which is followed by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Now, as Rupa Goswami has described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that this Uttama Bhakti, first class Bhakti, has three stages. The first is called Sadhana Bhakti. The second is called Bhava Bhakti. The third is called Prema Bhakti. So Sadhana Bhakti, which is the first stage of these three, also has two parts. The first part is Vaidhi Bhakti, the second part is Raganuga Bhakti. This Vaidhi Bhakti, that is part of the Gaudiya Vaishnava practice, is not actually of the Vidhi Marga, strictly speaking, because it is meant to lead one to the Raga Marga, along in the Raga Marga. But because the people are not directly qualified to go for the Raga Marga straight away, so there are certain rules and regulations that are there. But even in this kind of regulatory framework of rules and regulations, there is always that essence of spontaneous devotion to Krishna. For example, devotees in the Vidhi Marga will worship Tulasi Devi because she is to be offered at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And Gaudiya Vaishnavas also worship Tulasi. But when Gaudiya Vaishnavas worship Tulasi, we chant a song every morning. What do we chant? Can you name any sentences, lines from the Tulasi song, Arati, that we sing every morning? Mora eya bilash, vilas kunje diyavas, nayana haribo sada, yugal rupa rashi. So the devotee is praying for a residence in Vrindavan and for the ability to see Radha and Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Like this. So these are all spontaneous expressions. They pertain to the Raga Marga. But they are taught to those people who are practicing Vaidhi Bhakti. But this Vaidhi Bhakti is not of the Vidhi Marga. This Vaidhi Bhakti is of the Raga Marga, because it is very much connected to the Raganuga Bhakti. So the kind of bhakti that we in ISKCON follow is actually a type of Raganuga bhakti. But it has been, shall we say, tailored to suit the mentalities and the conditions of people in the modern age. And especially Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and then Srila Prabhupada, they have made arrangements in such a way that we follow rules and regulations very strictly, but the mood we try to inculcate is that of the spontaneous devotion. So for example, when we worship Radha Krishna deities in our ISKCON temples, there is an element of formality there. Strict rules and regulations, strict timings, strict procedures, same mantra, specifically everything. So there is an element of the Vaidhi path there. Because it is necessary for the purification of the heart of one who does not have spontaneous devotion. But internally, even though the worshipper of the deity follows all these rules and regulations and is very careful, but internally he prays for that bhava to Radha and Krishna, even as he worships them in that, along with those mantras. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he and Sanatan Goswami collaboratively, they wrote this book, Hari Bhakti Vilas. So there are many rules and regulations in this book, and it is not directed towards the progress in the Vidhi Marga. Although there are elements of Vaidhi there, but essentially it is meant for Gaudiya Vaishnavas who would like to progress on the Raga Marga. Was that clear?
So I'm given to understand that rituals and Vaidhiya Bhakti is indispensable.
Sorry, your voice is not clear. Can you?
Rituals and Vaidhiya Bhakti is indispensable as long as one gets graduated to Raganuga. Am I right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So my second part of the question is that there are so many instances happening in the pastimes of the Lord. For example, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meeting with Gopal Bhatta Goswami, which Srinivas' father and things like that, and they coming into his life and he giving the instructions and all. Is it all deterministic, or is it partly deterministic, or is it completely accidental?
You see, who can say, in the pastimes of the Lord and his great devotees, these things happen by the Lord's arrangement. Everything in the Lord's Leela and the Leelas of his eternal associates or his intimate associates is something that is inconceivable. It is not within the jurisdiction of us saying, is it determined, not determined. That is between the Lord and his devotee. But obviously, the Lord has a plan, even for each of his associates. So it happened that the fact that Srinivas Acharya, every time he went to meet a certain personality, be it Mahaprabhu, be it Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, Rupa Goswami, every time he reached, they had already disappeared. So we can understand this as an arrangement of the Lord, but not deterministic in the sense of how the laws of karma give us the reactions to our previous actions. Not in that sense. Okay?
The deity in Melkotai, what we see as Yoga Narasimha, is it also manifest from Shaligram Shila?
Yoga Narasimha, I will have to refresh my memory. I am not quite aware if it is a Shaligram Shila, but I know, I do remember that it is self-manifest. Actually, we are going there in a few days.
They say that Prahlad Maharaj was worshipping.
It is said like that. That is what the devotees there say, that it is self-manifest. But exactly how self-manifest, I cannot say. It is definitely self-manifest. But whether it was from a Shaligram Shila, I do not know. Okay?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. We welcome all the devotees again to this wonderful association of His Holiness.